Thank you and good morning. Comment on our first presentation and a little bit of a link to our last presentation is the reason that large parts of New Orleans are substantially below sea level is that we've lost carbon out of our soil. The draining process exposed these organic sediments to air and consequently lost bulk volume. So maybe there's a link between sequestration and saving the city. But more generally, my presentation will be the link between sequestration and saving our coastal wetlands, which is obviously a key buffer area in terms of our hurricane vulnerability. Another ironic link, I think I noticed this morning that our first two presentations were from folks who are from Brown University, and our new governor-elect obviously is a graduate of your fine school. So don't know whether that's cause and effect or just random correlation or what. The presentation I'm going to go through today has a little bit to do with our diversion projects that we're trying to work on. This is a project that I worked on when I was at URS Corporation. I've recently left URS, but I want to acknowledge that the United States Environmental Protection Agency was the federal sponsor for this project. I'm going to talk about a few things, but not get into the project in detail because it's really the purview of DNR and EPA and URS to really discuss the project in detail, and there's ample information on the project on EPA and DNR websites. But I'm going to talk about what we learned about this project when I was working on it and where we need to go in terms of future restoration efforts and wetland efforts in the state, and particularly about the hydrodynamic modeling and the status that we are in terms of understanding actually how to do diversions. We like to tell the rest of the country that we know how to fix our coast, and I think we're a long way towards that goal, but obviously much to learn, and that's kind of what we'll talk about. This is a location east of the west of the city, about halfway between New Orleans and Baton Rouge. The lake to the north is Lake Maurepas, which is, believe it or not, it is a tidal lake. As my kids like to say, it's tiny tides, microtidal. One of the theories of increasing the resilience of our coastal forest wetlands is to take some water out of the Mississippi River and restore the natural cycle of overbank flooding that occurs, combating some of the saltwater intrusion, but also bringing nutrients into the system and increasing the generation of bulk carbon in the soil, and therefore combating the subsidence with a positive input of carbon into the soil. These areas are cypress tupelo forests, and they're sinking so fast that the trees can't regenerate, and they're basically turning into ghost forests. So if you drive between Baton Rouge and New Orleans, you'll see this area, the interstate cuts right through it, and just outside the city you'll see some examples of what ghost cypress forests look like. In order to evaluate this kind of a project, we need to be able to see, can we really get water to go where we would like it to go? And that's the project that I was involved with. It was a feasibility study for restoring this Maurepas swamp with 1,500 CFS of water. And we collected about a year's worth of hydrographic data in this swamp, and looked at various ways the tidal signals propagate through this system, looked at low-frequency signals and the way they propagate through this system, and began looking and understanding how water moves around in a system this large with relatively minor levels of forcing. And as you could imagine, in a place like Louisiana, as flat as we are, we have very stagnant flows, very, very low turbulent systems, but we do want to move water through these systems. We have isolated, impounded areas, and we have some circulation dominated by channels that intersperse through these systems. So very complex circulation issues. If we want to know how water is going to move through this system, though, we can't model it as a series of 1D elements with ponds, which is the traditional Heck-Ras. Those of you who are familiar with modeling would be a traditional approach to that kind of a problem. We need to actually understand circulation patterns, because if we're going to move nitrates through this system, we need to understand retention times. And if we don't want those nitrates moving too fast through the system and having short-circuiting, we want to understand retention times. Interestingly enough, this area is also a receiving area for gravity runoff from an adjacent upland area. And while we want to retain the water long enough for the nitrates to be removed, we don't want to retain it so long in certain events that we would create increases in tailwater conditions that would cause the upland areas to have problems in their drainage through the system. Some of the Louisiana areas that are being talking about restoration for this type of freshening approach And again, this is a water input. We're not looking at bringing sediments into this system. This is too far upland. The sediment diversions that we're talking about in Louisiana are much farther south of the city. This is an area where we're trying to do freshening and bring nutrients into the system. So we have a real interest in these circulation issues and in trying to understand them and try to get them right to some degree to move forward with these projects. So we need some hydrodynamics and physical hydrodynamic modeling of this kind of system. And we need to look at circulation, so we need a 2D model. It's reasonable to look at depth average because we don't have vertical accelerations in this type of system that we need to look at. We've got so many different features we want to be able to follow that in terms of modeling, we can't just use a regular mesh to simulate this system when we try to put it into a numerical model. We need something like a finite element or more recently some finite volume approaches. As you're going to see, we have such a high number of features when we're going to resolve and such a large number of elements that we're going to have to approach this from a parallelized computing perspective, which is going to be increasingly the important tools in trying to use numerical modeling. We have unsteady boundary conditions. We have wetting and drying that's going on in this model. And we have some physical structures we want to be able to represent. So what we did is we looked around for a tool and tried to adapt this tool to this project. You've heard a lot about the modeling that's going on with storm surge in Louisiana. Turns out that is also a 2D model that meets a lot of the same physical processes in terms of circulation processes. We don't need storm surge in our model, but we do need to be able to move high and low frequency signals through our system. So it turns out that the ADCERC model, which was developed by the Corps, funded by the Corps, developed by Johannes Westerink and Rick Ludick, they were roommates at MIT, and one is now at Notre Dame, the other is at North Carolina. They were the authors of the model. We used that model, and it's turned out to be that this project was the first application of that type of a high-performance computing 2D circulation model in a restoration. And I can give you some idea of the mesh. This is the area. You can see the lake up in the north. This is just a snapshot of the mesh. It actually encompasses 170,000 nodes, which I know that number doesn't mean a lot to you guys, but it basically requires, a 20-day simulation requires 6 billion node steps, or it takes 2 days on 32 dual-core processors in order to run this model. Something we couldn't dream about doing 10 years ago, but now we're getting to the point where we can see how these models can try to help us answer some of these questions to see if these kind of projects can really accomplish what we'd like them to accomplish. Try to click the right button here. In pulling together some of this model, it's one thing to put a model together and put some information in and get some information out. It's another thing to try to get a model that tries to replicate some aspects of the system to a reasonable degree so that you can ask some questions and hope to get some answers that are meaningful out of it. And one of the ways we do that is calibration, and through calibration we look at some parameters that we're trying to adjust or tune our model with. And typically in a model, a hydrodynamic model, you look at resistance parameters, sometimes thought of in terms of in 1D applications like a Manning's N-type number. ADCERC at this point in time work with a drag coefficient number, which can be correlated. You could think of it like a Manning's N number. And it's a quadratic resistance expression, and by that I mean the velocity through the system is proportional, or the slope of the water surface is proportional to the velocity squared. It's a traditional, for those of you who have a hydrodynamics background or have taken a wetland circulation, you're familiar with Manning's equation. That's a quadratic resistance formulation. But one thing it's important to note is these systems are assumed to be fully turbulent, and I'll come back to that point in the future, is that the applications of these quadratic expressions assume full turbulence. We were able to use a variety of resistance values in the system according to different depths, and we were able to get a pretty decent match in our evaluation. That's just a list of some different values and correlating drag numbers to Manning's. But this represents three different types of events that we were calibrating to, and this represents one of our channels and one of our gauges that we had data for. And we were very well pleased with these kind of results, and we felt like, at least for this point, for a feasibility level model, that this was going to be able to help us look at some of these circulation questions. One of the things that we were able to get from this activity, and see if this plays out, So we were able to generate a model with the diversion in after we had our existing conditions. We modified it to show this diversion. We were able to go in and tweak the geometry of the system and play with different features and see how we can improve the retention time and the circulation in the system. One of the things we didn't want to have happen is we didn't want a lot of water coming south of I-10 because this is the area that has to receive the drainage. And we were able to look at blocking some culverts along here to see how that could improve it. And we wanted to improve the circulation and keep water from running out too quickly. One of the things that this does is it helps us look at pulsing sequence. One of the things we're finding in Louisiana is that these systems function better with pulsing, and that's because, like laying a hose in your front yard, if you lay that hose out there for too long, the water's going to end up pooling and ponding, and then it's going to mostly short circuit through the system. So turning it on and off is going to have a much better effect. I mentioned that we're able to look at the short circuiting. One of the ironies for this is it actually looks like we're getting very good impact and circulation through this system, but until you actually have a dynamic 2D model and you include some particle tracking or other ways to actually look at a retention time, you don't really notice the potential effect. Each one of these lines represents about 0.5% of the flow, and this represents a drastic improvement over what we initially had when we looked at the system. We're still not getting as much water into this part of the system as we'd like. And notice that virtually none of the water gets outside the domain. So one of the things we're able to see is just how much of the area is affected by this diversion. So the Maurepas feasibility study level model addressed our feasibility study needs. We looked at some of the circulation improvements. We were able to see that a lot of the benefits would be there, that we were able to manage the impacts to the drainage of the upland areas. But one of the things that I took away from this, and that I'll talk about for a couple more minutes, is where do we go next, and how do we improve these models to do a few more things that we'd like them to be able to do? I mentioned earlier the problem of the issue of the turbulence in this system. One of the things we found by using this high-end model on this system is that there are parts of the system that it doesn't capture to the degree we'd like. And this is sort of a little dirty laundry on it, but it's obviously not everything's rosy when you use models. This is an upper area during a rapid drain of an interior channel, and the model just doesn't capture this draining as well as we'd like. And we try to evaluate why that is. And our basic hypothesis right now is that the swamp is under-resistive relative to the channels. And there could be a couple reasons for that, and I'll kind of explore that with you for a moment. But notice these are the type of slopes that we have in the surface of the channels. So we have a very, very flat system. And our hypothesis is that we are well below full turbulence ranges in which those quadratic expressions are typically applied. This is another type of use of the quadratic expression. This is Manning's equation, but kind of twisted around in other forms. This is actually Darcy's expression. Notice that you have the V squared expression here, and then this is for full laminar flow, which would be not a quadratic but a linear relationship. This system is probably moving between full turbulence and something less than full turbulence. I don't really expect it to be fully laminar. That would be very striking for a natural system to be in a fully laminar state. But typically, other things that affect this resistance, obviously, are bottom roughness and form drag, the density of vegetation, the size, and all those issues related. But we've got resistance happening here, but we have different hydrologic regimes. We have things moving between full and low turbulence. For those of you who are engineers, maybe you've seen this in a hydraulics class. This is a Moody diagram. It's been well known in pipe flow for years that when you move oil and other fluids through pipes, that in the full turbulent range, your coefficients are stable. But as you reduce the level of turbulence in the system, those coefficients get larger and larger and larger. It's called the Reynolds number effect. Reynolds is basically a measure of turbulence. As turbulence goes down, the resistance factor goes up. This is a taken from a vendor who supplies drain pipe for gravity drainage. So this is pressure flow typically in a pipe, full flow in a pipe. This would be gravity drainage, so partial flow in a pipe. They're saying basically don't design your pipe for any flow rates down in this range because we don't really know how much the resistance is going to be, but it's going to be a lot larger once you get down below threshold velocities for full flow. So again, this phenomenon is very well known in engineering. In the natural systems, Bob Cadlick at Michigan has been studying this from a wetland perspective for years. He's obviously an author of one of our major texts on constructive treatment of wetlands. It's acknowledged that there's a problem with applying full turbulence to these systems, But there's very little data and study, and what study there is showing basically, hey, in a lot of cases, to be conservative, you ought to use a linear expression rather than a quadratic expression. That doesn't help us out too much because we need to be able to have an expression that'll transition between all of those flows. So this is a little illustration I came up with which kind of bounds the problem. If you assume quadratic expressions, your slope velocity relationship on a log-log scale would look like this. If you assume the linear relationship, it would look like this. Well, obviously there's a significant impact of assuming a fully laminar system versus assuming a fully quadratic system. And the truth probably lies a lot of cases in between, and the system may be moving between these two. I think that explains some of our under-resistance in the swamp. I don't think we're accounting for less than full turbulence in the swamp. But there's also the problem that the channels might be over-resistive. And that may be because in the model we use things called turbulence closure schemes. We have to have some method in these numerical models of accounting for the subgrid scale turbulence. And one of the common ways to do that is using something called an eddy viscosity term, which says, oh, well, maybe turbulence is something like viscosity. And in numerics and in the hydrodynamic theory, eddy viscosity basically assumes turbulence is something that just spreads out momentum in the system. It doesn't act as a real sink for it. It just spreads it out. That's somewhat adequate in modeling, but it also has its limitations in being less than ideal. We know momentum turbulence actually does do work on the fluid. It actually takes energy and momentum from the system. But in the use of that type of approach, it's spreading momentum in the channels towards the banks, and because we do have higher resistance in our model along the banks, we are moving momentum out towards the banks. So I think the model probably that I presented earlier probably is under-resistive in the swamps and maybe over-resistive in the channels. So those are the challenges that we would like to get this model improved. One of the previous slides I showed you is that we're estimating retention times of about 6 days in the system. Those of you who work with nitrates and wetlands might recognize that that retention time might be marginal. And so that's why this kind of modeling approach needs to be really improved. We have a lot of wetland projects that we're looking at in Louisiana, and I think there's a real need to improve our ability to handle this hydrodynamic aspect. Not only the Maurepas model, but we have a lot of other diversion projects that we're looking at. This is a project in the not too far from the Lower Ninth Ward area to try to improve the wetland system on this area, which of course is a major issue in terms of Katrina sending its surge through this system. We have an active diversion that's going through this area, and we've done no real analysis to see what the short-circuiting. This diversion's much larger than the proposed one over here in Hope, but this one here hasn't really been studied from the standpoint of short-circuiting. And of course, I mentioned earlier, as we get down in this area, we're looking at more sediment diversion. So part of this issue can be translated also to the issue of sediments. You know, I mentioned short circuiting, and the other issue is how quickly do your sediments fall out? If we're not understanding our velocities properly, we could have sediments, the fine amount of sediments that will pass through this structure could fall out and choke our diversion. So we do have a number of design issues that relate to understanding these velocities in this system to a lot greater degree. We're also interested in looking at the interaction of our hurricane protection systems and our looking at coastal landscapes to improve our hurricane protection system. So we have a number of coastal basins in which we have upper estuaries that we're looking at understanding the circulations in these systems better, or understanding the impact of maybe modifying these systems a little bit to improve our coastal protection. Well, all of these modifications need to be understood in terms of circulations in those systems, and obviously we need to have some better physics of what those circulations look like. So I submit that we need to understand this problem not just for diversion design, but also for just better understanding of circulations within upper estuaries. Sea level rise, geologic changes, hydrologic modifications are all part of this milieu. In addition, I think there's more and more interest among all kinds of users of our coast in tidal forecasts. And this impact will plays part of a role in understanding and forecasting our tides and our circulations. We're starting to give some thought into how we can do this, and in my last slide I've got four steps that I've recommended to begin to look at this. One of the first steps I think that would be useful would be to take a very controlled setting like a flume and use a very low flow in the flume and use some very fine measurement techniques to look at slopes. We're talking about water level measurements on the micron scale as opposed to maybe the millimeter scale here, which is a challenge. We're pretty good at measuring flow at sub-millimeters per second, but water level changes is a little bit tougher. Get some ideas of what some empirical expressions might look like that can handle that transition from laminar linear to fully turbulent quadratic expression. See if there's maybe a relationship that looks reasonable for handling that whole range. Get it into a 2D model code and then go back out and acquire some data from a 2D system, see if we can make some reasonable parameter fits, and then see how that revised model handles some of these kind of scenarios that we modeled earlier. And that's my presentation.